Dress Pocket, 17th Century. Read for you by Dolly Alderton. Often, it's the smallest things that make the biggest difference. In the lives of many women, one such thing was a bag. Not a handbag, no, but an altogether smaller kind of bag, or, to be more precise, a pouch that was long withheld from them but finally sewn into garments like dresses and trousers. The pocket. Until late into the 17th century, European fashion didn't differentiate between men and women when it came to bags. Everyone carried their worldly possessions around with them in little pouches until a fashionable rift opened up between the sexes, and suddenly we had men with their trouser pockets and, accordingly, the option of keeping everything, keys, pieces of gold, whatever else they wanted to lug about, in pouches handily integrated into their clothing. Women, on the other hand, continued to be denied such a practical opportunity. Nowadays, we rarely think about them. They're one of those things we just tend to possess. But having pockets in your skirt, dress, trousers, or jacket amounts to a certain kind of freedom, a certain nonchalance too. Even at the beginning of the 20th century, the sight of a woman sticking her hands casually into her jacket pockets was regarded as incredibly disturbing and unfeminine. When Coco Chanel added pockets to her shirts and jackets, she caused a furore. And back in the 17th century, this would have been simply unimaginable. While men paraded around with pockets in their trousers and jackets, women went around with flat pockets, like this specimen from 1740s England. Pouches in the shape of a squashed pear that measured around 30 to 40 centimetres end to end. They were worn tied around the waist, with items pushed in through a slit at the top. Depending on your social status, you'd tie your pouch over or under your petticoat. Elegant ladies hid them between the many layers of their dresses or directly on top of the structure known as a hoop skirt, so they had to more or less undress to get to their pocket. Working women usually wore them on top of their aprons for easy access to their money or tools at the market or in the workshop. It was in pockets like these, mostly made of linen and sometimes decorated with pretty embroidery, that women carried just about everything they needed. Boxes of chocolates, thimbles, snuff boxes, nutmeg graters, tiny books, the obligatory sewing kit, just in case you spontaneously wanted to mend something, coins, and all sorts of other stuff. They were essentially a cross between today's tote bags and the recently revived bum bag. Just as many of us schlep around half the kitchen sink with us these days, women back then also went about their business with the most absurd items in tow. Treats and secrets, love letters, mementos, money, of course, but also maybe a small knife, or later, revolver for self-defence. At night, many of them slept with their pockets under their pillows. They were their treasure chests, a kind of safe. As such, these pockets, though decidedly less practical than the integrated male version, most definitely did have emancipatory value. They were secret little spaces that weren't terribly easy to peer into, which soon gave them something of a disreputable image. By the early 19th century, they had to some extent become a yardstick for female virtue. If her pocket was full, a woman was anything but pure, whereas a modest, empty little pocket was a symbol of virginity. We can see this especially well in George Eliot's first novel, Adam Bede, in which we find Captain Donnithorne standing in front of four-year-old Totty, whose cousin Hetty he will soon be seducing. "Has she got a pocket on?" he asks of the child, upon which the girl lifts up her skirt, shows him the little thing, and says, "It dot nothing in it." Donnithorne replies that he, as it happens, has something for her, 5 silver sixpences, which is soon making a pretty jingle in Totty's little pink pocket. It would hardly be possible to make a clearer allusion to female sexuality. And perhaps it was this association that increased the symbolic power of the pocket, until, by the mid-19th century, in England and the USA particularly, there was an outright battle being waged for trouser and breast pockets. In the eyes of women, especially the suffragettes, pockets were more than just little pouches stuck to the leg or chest in which you could keep coins or hankies. They were political, a battlefield of gender order. The women's magazine Vogue, for example, noted around 1900 that the slogan "Pockets for Women" appeared at suffragette demonstrations almost as often as "Votes for Women." And as the American novelist Charlotte Perkins Gilman explained, writing in the New York Times in 1905, one supremacy there is in man's clothing, its adaptation to pockets. Women have from time to time carried bags, sometimes sewn in, sometimes tied on, sometimes brandished in the hand, but a bag is not a pocket. For women, as is so often the case when it comes to fashion, the point was mobility. It was about no longer having to rummage around in layers of fabric if you needed anything, and also not having to spend your whole life tying and untying three pockets. The idea of lugging around all your possessions probably wasn't very attractive either. After all, the aim was to move about freely and easily. And indeed, beginning in the 19th century, women opted less often for tie-on pockets and instead began to go around with little handbags, only these turned out to be even less practical. You no longer had your hands free, stood about with your little bag in a stiff and strained manner, and probably never had any fun because you were always afraid you were just about to lose or forget something. Anyone who's ever carried a clutch bag will be familiar with this feeling. It was exactly this, the historic pocketlessness of women and its freedom-robbing consequences, that the famous suffragette suit hoped to address. Legend has it that it didn't just feature two or four, but rather six or even eight integrated pockets. Or, as the New York Times noted with concern in 1910, plenty of pockets in suffragette suit. You could say, then, that one's scope of freedom is directly proportional to the number of one's pockets.